record this, and we will be having the program probably in 2 weeks on our website, boardoptions.com. I would like to introduce the author of this case, Charlie Goodrich. Charlie and I have known each other at least, I think probably more, but at least since 2019. You really want to get to know Charlie. You want to get to have his contact information, and you want to put it in your contact information on just in case. And the reason why I suggest that is that Charlie is a consultant in Northern Virginia, but his practice is really national. He specializes in restructuring insolvency. So you don't want to call Charlie if you can avoid it, but if you need to, Charlie's the guy you want to call. Typically, he helps business refinance, restructure, sell, or liquidate. Recently, Charlie sold the assets of a $10 million Boston-centric business to a larger company for four times the liquidation value. Before launching Goodrich and Associates, Charlie held the position of vice president for State Street Corporation. Charlie holds an MBA in finance from the University of Chicago and a bachelor's degree in economics from the University of Virginia. So we're very pleased to have Charlie with us.
Happy to be here.
I'm going to start going through the different groups, and they can talk to Charlie about what have they decided. Then I'm going to ask Charlie, give us your perspective. So we'll start with the first group, which is Amita, Craig, Michael, and Marianne. Do you have a spokesperson?
Think I am the spokesperson for this group. And I come to this with some experience, having done some corporate litigation in my earlier days, and obviously bumping into issues in my current practice. And there's a whole cadre of issues that come up with respect to these particular questions. I know some other people that'll go unmentioned that also experience on C-suites that'll be familiar with some of these issues, but. What we talked about in our group was that, first of all, I mentioned the fact that board members are protected under Delaware law by the business judgment rule. It's a very important concept, was designed to attract people to sit on boards because board members don't make the same kind of compensation as officers do who are working full time. And if members felt as though they were personally liable and vulnerable to suits all the time, they probably wouldn't sit. And so the business judgment rule basically says that if you're in your good faith exercise of business judgment, even if you make a mistake, or there's an error, or there's a problem with a corporation, that you're insulated. And that's not enough because of the proliferation of litigation. So you do need insurance on top of the business judgment rule. And that there's consensus in our group that, whether a D&O policy is indeed good stuff, it depends upon a lot of things. It depends upon the limits of the D&O, meaning how much coverage there is. It depends upon the exclusions. It depends on how well it was negotiated. But one would hope that, with the property company involved and having their own people sitting on the board, that others have already had an interest in making sure that a very good D&O policy was negotiated and that it was issued by a solvent company, because obviously insurance is only as good as the solvency of the insurer. In terms of who's most likely to sue whom, whenever people have investments made and they feel as though their investments have performed poorly, unfortunately, they often look to others to blame. And sometimes no one to blame. It's just the fact that the business isn't doing as well or the expectations were unrealistic. But you imagine that there could be suits brought against the officers for their inability to accomplish business goals, likewise against board members. Although, again, both of those parties are subject to protection by this business judgment rule, as long as they're not engaged in self, they're not profiteering, they're not putting or elevating their personal interests above and beyond the interests of the corporation and above and beyond the interests of all shareholders. So in terms of primary litigation risks, well, the risk is like just getting involved in a suit. It doesn't really matter the merits of the suit. Anyone who has been involved or has been in a corporation where someone sued it, you know, it's it can be disabling to the company. It can be very damaging to the company's value, can be damaging to relationship structures within the company, and it's costly because you're getting, in every case, very large firms involved with very, very high legal expenses. There's a reference here to defense costs being paid in almost every single corporate indemnification provision and in every single D&O policy which backs up that corporate indemnification. There's a concept called advancement, which means that the director or officer will have his or her legal fees advanced to them, subject potentially to a right of being, you know, repaid. And there's something called an undertaking, which is what you sign, which says, if I'm later indicated to have acted in a manner that was not in the best interest of the corporation, and I did not have a good faith belief that I was acting in the best interest of the corporation, I am indebted to the company for the fees that were expended to defend me. And the last thing, there's a reference to like legal counsel. You know, the way that the business judgment rule is enhanced is when directors rely on experts, and in most corporations of any size, they're relying on experts to set compensation. They're relying on experts for business strategy, companies like Accenture and PwC. They're relying on experts for technology development, for technology adoption. And the reason why is because that's what smart people do when they are running companies. They don't think they can do it all. So they turn to experts in the field. And if those experts are guiding them as to what to do, that is the essence of the judgment rule, which is I am relying in good faith on the expertise of others. And so, you know, I wouldn't think, I mean, Martin may want to play golf, but you know, as long as he has these protections, D&O, he has you know, some compensation be in, you know, stock, or he's going to get handsomely compensated because he can help to drive the value of this company, and he's already a substantial investor. You know, if it's not like, it's not like he's necessarily walking into kind of an unreal or unusual hornet's nest of, you know, taking on these positions. And that's why people do take them on.
Thank you very much. I should mention, not without surprising, that Mike is an attorney. It's always good to have an attorney in the room for a case like this. So thank you very much, Mike. The next group is Barry, Jack, Jali, and Vera.
I think I'm representing the group, and of course, let me qualify this by saying I'm not an attorney, and I don't think we had any attorneys in our group, and so this will be coming at it from a little bit different perspective, just a pure business perspective rather than a legal perspective. You know, one of the things, Charlie, I'd love to hear from you afterwards is, you know, we feel like we just didn't have enough financial data to really understand what was going on. You know, from my perspective, you can be looking at the officers and be saying, you know, you did a poor job. However, I believe the company was a break even though they had massive expenses from the additional software that you know, some of the folks were unaware of. And so it may be when you dive into it that the officers are doing an outstanding job, you know, keeping the company above water. at this point. So there's just not enough data to know that. Also, in addition, with Martin being a significant investor in this, I think there's a possibility that he may be the one bringing the lawsuit. And it's possible that that I'm off base with this, but and so I think it would represent a conflict of interest to come on as chair when he may be the one initiating the lawsuit. As far as the questions go, we were a little mixed on the way that we would answer those. If I was in the role of advising Martin, certainly I would advise against taking that chair role as there is potential lawsuits. And as far as the DNO goes, if I was advising him again, I would definitely be advising him to bring in his own corporate counsel to be reviewing that insurance policy. And I'd obviously just relying on what the investment firm said that it was really good stuff and whatnot. So overall, I think that's kind of where our perspective was that we were really lacking the data to make a quality decision, but with the information that we had, it would be a potential conflict and unwise of Martin to accept that chairman role.
Thank you very much, Jack. Anybody else from Jack's group have any perspective? Okay, next group is Ingrid, John Morgan, and Kate.
And I am the speaker from this group. And I too am not a lawyer. We came at it purely from a business perspective, some of the experience of being on boards. We sort of addressed the questions, or we did address the questions as they were laid out in the case. So how can you be confident that the DNO policy is good? Well, it's really sort of two-pronged attack. We sort of decided, and John Elis had some experience in this area. And there are fiduciary insurance advisors that you can get that are independent and can provide a very good in-depth view of what is covered in the policy and what is not. That backed up by a legal review is probably the best way to be able to figure that out. In terms of who's going to sue who, there are so many possibilities in here. It was really hard to be able to see which the even prioritize which one was going to be the one that's came to the top. But it's very likely that somewhere along the line, some investor is going to go after the board for misrepresentation. But that's as far as we really got because there are so many different angles that it could come from. There are a ton of litigation risks to Martin, as the last speaker was saying. One is he could be the litigation risk himself, and that is a problem. But again, there are litigation risks from all over, partly from the fact that it's just not making the money they said they were going to in the beginning. In terms of the defense costs, as Charlie was saying, that should be covered by the policy. He had a better view on that than we did. And if Martin isn't sued, but somebody's making some real noise about threatening him, or somebody's attorney is, of course he should get his own counsel. And hopefully that counsel will be paid for by D&O insurance if it's covered. So that's pretty much what we got to. We did not have time to attack the bonus question on this one.
Good. Thank you very much. Our next group is Babs, Bill, Charlie, and Lara.
I'm not a lawyer, and I have no good lawyer jokes today. Yes, always check your D&O. So we didn't talk as much about D&O as we did talk about what the heck the board was doing, because while it's nose in, fingers out, they didn't seem to have their nose in at all. They didn't seem, you didn't have financials because there didn't appear to be any plan. And there also didn't appear to be any oversight of what the CEO was doing because people were going, gee, I didn't know he was going to spend this and I didn't know he was going to do that. Well, why not? Where was your plan? So I think the first place to start is not with who's going to sue whom. It's should the board has to fix this now and have oversight and have a plan. So good old Edward should be coming back to the next meeting with his business plan and what he's actually going to do so everybody knows. And then the board can actually have a discussion, right? The board needs to tell them what they want back. And obviously their final, you know, the biggest job of the board is to fire the CEO or hire the CEO. So Edward could be replaced, but it's unlikely because the other big thing is there's no independent, we think, on the board, because it didn't tell us who else Edward brought on with him, but we're going to assume that he didn't bring people who were independent. So the lead independent director left. They didn't replace that person, and they're bringing in Martin, who had a relationship with Royal Bank, so he's not independent, and he was an investor already, and he was a mentor to Edward, so he's not independent either. So they also need to bring it back that independent quickly. And also there was a discussion about, hey, do we actually vote to increase the size of the board so there's more independence, or replace, refresh the board in another way so there's a better view of independence? And really, should they consider a chair who's independent? Should they have considered that? There's just too many conflicts of interest. However, we did ask Charlie, he answered one question, which was, it is in Delaware, so that was to our advantage. And one of the things we talked about is, yeah, there's, you know, you can sue here, you can sue here, everybody could sue, but we haven't heard anything that anybody can actually sue for. There wasn't a breach. So what? They broke even. Lots of companies break even, and lots of companies actually lose a ton of money. So why are you suing while they're improving the software so it'll actually do something? It could be a good thing, and they could make barrels of money in 6 months. So we didn't talk that much about lawsuits because we weren't sure what there was going to be a lawsuit about. So yes, you prevent. We know, be preventative and have good D&O and have your own lawyer check the D&O. But yeah, everybody likes to sue.
Thank you very much, Babs. Yep, everybody likes to sue. The next group is Ari, Ed, Maria, and Moonlit.
Hi, everybody. I'll be representing my group today.
Moonlit, I can't hear you.
We covered a lot of the topics that the former groups have talked about today. Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can't hear you now.
Okay, great. So we covered a lot of topics that other groups have presented already. So I'll just go over them for quick highlights. For the D&O insurance, of course, it's mandatory, as we've all experienced here, to get that looked at by outside party and really get an assessment over the accuracy and validity and making sure that it has the appropriate coverages for all of the boards for that particular situation. We also questioned who is the CEO. And so that was not clear and evident. Also, the lack of independence with the board members. So all of them having relationship and investors, there was no clear independent. And although the chairperson was kind of the independent, still too much former relationship, investment, etc. Tertiary, and where I'll end here, is the mantra on our group was, everybody sues everybody in Texas. And so in this particular scenario, I think it applied because similar, there were a lot of different scenarios which litigation could occur, and we didn't have enough to lean toward one more lawsuit than the other. So thank you. Larry, back to you.
Larry isn't here right now. So who's the next group? Thank you, Maria. Appreciate it. I don't know who the is. There one more group left?
I think it's,
raise your hand if you haven't spoken.
It would be Craig, Suzanne, and myself. So Suzanne, okay. I don't know if Craig is still on. I'll start, and Suzanne, you can chime in.
Thank you.
So I guess a lot of points have been covered. We started off by talking about just the significant conflicts of interest, especially around Martin Lodge. Yes, he was relatively small time investor, $4 million, but you know, he also had the background of the high speed computerized trading. And I really thought, I think we thought that he should have had better understanding of the statistical models and perhaps the concerns that other had expressed about SPECO essentially only breaking even because of these statistical models. So he never really weighed in on that. And I also wondered, was he responsible for some of these statistical models as well? But I don't have that historical background. And then, of course, the whole D&O insurance issue. I don't know why he, or we don't know why he would ever consider signing on as chair, which without reviewing that ahead of time. That just didn't make any sense, especially with all his relationships. We talked a lot about who would sue whom, and we just proposed that maybe Royal Bank would come after the board. Royal Bank being the creator of SpeedCo, Ed Crane being investor, I think of like 26 million. Craig had added in that I had originally said something like, well, maybe Hallmark would somehow sue, but Craig was saying usually the PE firms aren't going to do that. But so that was a lot of discussion as well. But just, and again, as people brought up, where was the board in this? Where was the CEO in this? But I think everyone is so interconnected here, and there's no independence. So difficult to say.
Thank you, Sandra. Did anybody else
And
want to say anything
Suzanne,
to
want to
that?
weigh in, or Craig? Thank you.
Charlie, you want to weigh in?
Sure. So this, this more or less really happened. I was brought in to liquidate the company. The CEO was fired just before I arrived, or I'll say a month before I arrived. And in the words of the chairman, or Ed Martin, who, when he was with Royal Bank, he was there at Royal Bank, the prime broker. And he left and ran a much larger competitive firm that he made tons and tons of money off that did more or less the same thing. And as he said, the people were right, the systems were right, and IT infrastructure. Unfortunately, the algorithms didn't work. Oh well. The bigger picture was, and maybe it was not as clear as it should have been in the case. They're breaking even on trading volume, so they're not making money, they're not losing money, but that really means zero revenue, and so they're going through their $90 million at a very quick pace. What you really have is a junior guy that's trying to make himself, that did an investment that's turning out, that decides to, okay, let's just hit the accelerator harder and pray. You've got a CEO who's maybe only got $5-6 million in this out of a total of 90. The rich guys are pretty rich, so they don't care about it. Hallmark is a $60 million total write-off that they have to explain to limited partners, probably while they're raising the fund, right? So what they ended up doing was threatening the former CEO with securities fraud, claiming all these things. The securities fraud, you got to remember, there's no point in suing the company because there's no assets. There's, it's just going out of business. And basically, as cover for their lim to tell their limited partners that, gee, this guy screwed us over, et cetera, just hope, hope it kind of winds away. When I was brought in as a liquidator, I didn't took on the D&O policy, and I do what I always do, is I have insurance broker friends of mine look at it. They were trying to bring me in to the defense attorney was trying to bring me involved, saying, well, maybe you really weren't doing a good job liquidating, et cetera, using me as leverage. At the end of the day, They did have a very good policy. They initially did not have D&O insurance, and finally the PE firm said, "We'll use our guys." It had $20 million of regular coverage, $10 million of drop-down coverage. It was crucial about, one of the things when you get into bad situations and you say, "Oh, good thing we have that." The $10 million drop-down also covered any jurisdiction would. Was valid in any jurisdiction other than the United States. So a United States judge could say you can't pull on the policy and they'd still pay $10 million out. When you get into what is a claim, the key that they had was that it was any email or letter was sufficient. A verbal threat, that's not a claim. But so they did have some emails. It was kind of ironic because in the back and forth, they did get a chance to see kind of a draft of the complaint that I wasn't supposed to see. And basically, it would be admission that they screwed up the due diligence and not what you want your limited partners to see. And that's pretty much what happened. But the big thing is, the play, it's not, the issues are not board independence, right? The board is a negotiation between the private equity firm and this investor of who's going to be who and control like that. The big people, the big litigation risks are just cover from the private equity firm with their limited partners.
Are there any lessons to be learned in this case for individuals who serve as independent directors on boards?
Yeah, I think step back and look at the big picture of what are the real who's who, what are the real stakes involved? Focus less so much on is there independence or not. Focus on what might outsiders, things go wrong. What might outsiders do just for their own purposes? It may not have a valid legal claim at the end of the day, but if it buys them time to let a bad mistake go away in the, in the minds of various people, you're exposed.
Any other comments or reactions to the case?
Did Hallmark ever own their culpability with respect to poor due diligence?
I have no idea. I will say the junior partner did not last my engagement.
Yeah.
He quote decided to have a, a career with a CFO of a startup. And he had been pushing very hard, thinking that somehow he was going to sell all this IP and make lots of money. The secret sauce we sold to the CTO for $13,000.
Anybody else with comments, questions, concerns?
Yeah. Charlie,
Yep.
it seems strange in this. Am I muted? No, I'm fine.
You're
It
fine.
seems yeah, it seems strange in this whole scenario that there wasn't more internal discussions in the board and so forth about what were they expecting, how well had they done the discovery process, not the due diligence of the investment, but the whole discovery process within the company of making sure that they had something that indeed there was a need for and that indeed the technology would do. That it was like a family that wasn't talking. Was there any, I know you were on the more on the
Yeah.
legal end of things, but was there any attempts to bring in a consultant to get a discussion going on the psychology of all this?
The CEO did bring in somebody to help quote evaluate his team. But not in terms of the overall dynamics. At the end of the day, this thing was a bet that you can come up with secret sauce that works in a very competitive industry.
It sounds like that, long before the investors may have done poor due diligence, the founders were doing poor due diligence.
No, I don't. I think the issue was the investor. The investor didn't realize what they were buying and investing in. Either that or they ignored some of, how competitive it was. But, if from what I gathered when I was there, the pieces they didn't have, if you were in the industry, you would know you would have to go out and get those.
John, you had a question.
Yeah, Charlie, one, good to see you.
Yeah. Hey, John.
I encourage everybody to connect with Charlie and get his email newsletter, which is quite valuable reading every time it comes out. Charlie, my question is, when they talked about the extra software they needed to buy, was some of that trying to reinvent the algorithm that had been the...
No. It's everything that goes on top to actually allow you to trade.
Okay. So
And so,
that was
for
never going
example,
to work.
and there's software that's high compliance costs. So, for example, every email has to be stored on a special write once, read many time type of devices, et cetera. They had all kinds of servers, mostly in New Jersey, but they also had operations in Hong Kong and London with lots of expensive people.
So they really did the investment without any evidence that the algorithm worked.
I suspect, I wasn't there early enough. I suspect it had promise, but as the competitive environment increased, what they were finding probably went away, right? So there was a big rapid growth in spending for basically faster communications. One of the things that the CEO was pushing for was to spend even more money to get direct links, even faster links into the stock exchanges. Because, basically these are all, the one valuable, somewhat valuable asset, didn't sell for a lot, was they had trading data down to the millisecond.
Okay.
They were really looking at changes at a millisecond basis.
Charlie, John has recommended your newsletter. Can you tell people how to subscribe to your newsletter?
Well, that's hard to do these days because I decided that I quit. I ran out of ideas and republished the same ones for 5 years, and so I.
Well, that's going to make it hard. Well,
yeah, so I quit writing it. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we are new to your newsletter, so might as well read some older stuff.
Yeah.
There's market demand.
Yeah, they're on my website. I haven't taken my website.
Any other questions or comments about the case?
I have a couple of comments about this industry. I was involved with the two companies that is doing that. One of the challenges, you run the algorithm initially on historical data, and the company I was involved running the historical data showed the algorithm is doing 5% better than the market. But then once they go live, turns out it's not 5% better than the market. So that killed it right there. The other thing about speed of execution, one of the other companies here based in Austin, I think, you lease servers at the Wall Street or at the market data center. So you gain few milliseconds, as you said, because when you do large blocks of transactions, every millisecond could be millions of dollars.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much, Charlie. Appreciate it.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Larry.
We look forward to seeing you all next month at Seat at the Table. We will have a new case. And again, Charlie, thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Take care. Hope you enjoy your summers, everybody.
Everybody have a good 4th.
Good 4th of July.
Bye.